Hello and welcome to the SysTech podcast series. This is Steve Talon of SysTech's Product Management Group, and I am joined today by a couple fellows that are intimately knowledgeable about the global serialization marketplace, and specifically today we're going to talk about the EU FMD. So we've got Dirk Rogers, SysTech's Global Regulatory Strategist, and Alistair Taylor, SysTech's Director of European Sales. Welcome, gentlemen. As we get started, I kind of want to get into a level set situation. So, Alistair, I'd kind of like to start with you. And as we look at building a serialization program, there is now this notion of sort of four or five levels to a serialization program, levels one through level four or five. I'm wondering if you could sort of get into the definitions of what those levels are, and how our customers are looking at implementing to those levels.
Okay, Steve. So there's typically two main groupings when you're considering serialization solutions. As you've mentioned, one, two, three, four, and four, five. And really, they fall into two areas. So the first element to talk about is level one, two, and three. And that's the solution that works inside of the manufacturing facility. So level three is the site manager, the solution that manages all the serialization activity at a particular factory or a location. Level two is the solution that manages the serialization on the individual production line or manual area. And level one is the device level. And this is where in serialization, you're talking to printers to print, telling cameras to take pictures. So that's the solution inside of the factory. That's level one, two, and three. And they pretty much come as a package. And what we're seeing in the marketplace is the organizations, the pharmaceutical industry, are moving towards a level one, two, and three topology, where in the past they may have had a level one and two only. But we're seeing a big change now where most of the organizations that we're talking to want a solution that's level one, two, and three, not just level one and two. The flip side of that is level four stroke five. And there's a little bit of discussion in the marketplace. Is it level four and five, or is it just level four? But in reality, there's two or three elements of functionality. So these solutions typically sit at the enterprise level, either cloud-based or at headquarters inside of an organization. Level four and five is all about managing numbers across the entire enterprise. So making sure that you are generating and managing and storing numbers for all of your manufacturing sites, whether they're your own or whether you're using a contract manufacturer, a contract packager. It's about getting numbers in. So if you are manufacturing for another organization, it's about getting the numbers from that organization into your system to send to your facilities. Or if you're a virtual farmer, for example, it's about generating your numbers and passing them to your CMOs. The other element of the level four stroke five is obviously all the communication that needs to take place. So this is the communications between your clients, your customers, any subcontractors, and with the authorities, so the regulatory bodies like the EU hub, as it ubiquitously is called. So that's the main functions of levels four and five. So there's a direct split. So one's very much about organizing numbers. It's very much a IT type solution, database driven, sits on the cloud or in the enterprise. That's levels four and five. And the other one, level one, two, three, is really about managing serialization within an individual factory or manufacturing packaging location.
And when it comes to actually talking about pharmaceuticals becoming compliant with the eventual go live of this regulation in February 2019, it's not just putting a serial number on a box. It really does require kind of what you talked about. It's this IT project, but it's this communications project. So, Dirk, when it comes to the regulation itself, we're talking about a base physical tamper evident component, a serialized component, and then this communications component, right?
That's right, exactly right. In fact, there are what they call safety features required in the law for every package introduced into the market after that date in 2019, February. One of them is a tamper evident device. Not a whole lot is said about that in the regulation, but the second one is a unique identifier, which is in barcode and human readable forms on the packages themselves. And then the data that must be uploaded to the EU hub is the third part of it, third component, and perhaps one of the more important components, because that's what's used at the pharmacy to verify each package prior to dispensing to a patient.
So, Alistair, one of the things I think that's interesting here is that this particular regulation is not going live for a little while, but we have many, you know, from a SysTech perspective, we have many customers in the EU already deployed with a serialization solution, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We've got people in the EU who are already serializing live for Korea, for China, and indeed for the United States as well. They've been implementing serialization for 3 or 4 years now.
Now, are they waiting to serialize their EU distributions for this, you know, waiting for the reg to go live, or are they serializing, you know, for EU markets already?
It really is a mixed bag, Steve. We have some customers who are going to hold off till the very last minute. We also have some customers who are looking to serialize now and start putting tests through the systems. You know, if I go to my local supermarket pharmacy and get that particular manufacturer, so it's a pharmacy that also has manufacturing right now, from one of the biggest supermarkets in the UK, their products are already serialized, ready for the EU hub. So it's really a mixed bag, and it's one of the confusing things from the customer's point of view is should they be serializing now, or should they wait until towards the end of 2018 when we're getting closer towards the regulation going live before they start putting serialized products into the marketplace?
So I think that's a great segue to kind of turn the conversation to Dirk, because in some of our we've done webinars on the EU FMD, and the term that you've used in those webinars and in some of your RxTrace blogs is that the February 2019 date is what you refer to as a big bang. So it has that big, important go live of the regulation, and that has significant impacts on kind of how you would see a customer or a pharmaceutical looking at when they really should be going live with European serialization, right?
That's right. That big bang startup is problematic in several ways, but one of the things related to when a manufacturer should start introducing serialized product into the market in the EU is probably one of the biggest impacts. And so what I mean when I say the big bang is that all segments are supposed to start or required to start performing their assigned duties, the FMD duties, on the same day. And so manufacturers are supposed to start introducing product with serial numbers on that date, which I think, I don't know if we've actually said the date, it's February 9th, 2019. And wholesale distributors are supposed to follow their requirements on that date, and dispensers are supposed to start verifying drugs on that date as well, if they have drugs that if they're dispensing that have the serial number present on it. So as if you can imagine, in a perfect world, all of the drugs start being serialized on that date, but they don't get shipped to dispensers for a few weeks. They start showing up a few weeks later, maybe a few months later in some cases. And so patients start receiving serialized product that is being verified as it starts being received at pharmacies. Now, the problem with serializing or introducing serialized product early. It's not against the regulation to start introducing serialized product prior to that date. But the problem is that any drug that gets to a pharmacy prior to that date and is dispensed to a patient prior to that date will not be verified. The odds that a pharmacy is going to voluntarily start verifying those drugs prior to that date is very slim, in my view. They're not required to, and it's costly to actually take the time to do it. So odds are those serialized drugs are going to be dispensed prior to that date if they arrive at the dispenser to the patient. Now, that means that serial number, those serial numbers that are being dispensed to those patients are not being decommissioned, and they're not being verified in the database. So it looks like even after the product goes to the patient, that serial number is still active in the system. And so it leaves a window of opportunity for a counterfeiter to collect the serial numbers of drugs that are being introduced prior to that date and actually create counterfeit drugs at any time prior to expiration date of those drugs, because forever, or at least until the expiration date of that drug, those serial numbers will still be active in the and will verify properly whether they're the actual drug or a counterfeit drug. So it's a window of opportunity. So the earlier you start introducing those serial numbers into the market in the EU prior to the date, the bigger that window becomes.
That's interesting and kind of a gap engineered into the system from the get-go. So I think that's important information for the audience to understand that there is that advanced serialization risk that is potentially out there. The real risk I don't know, but the possible and potential for counterfeit creation, leveraging those serialized numbers before the big bang date is interesting. Alistair, one of the things with you being much closer to the action in the EU, here in the United States, we were delayed with the DSCSA go live. There are many layers to the EU FMD directive, especially some of its data collection standpoints from a centralized EU hub and then kind of individual country hubs. Can you speak to some of that complexity and what you're hearing about the readiness of the data collection systems in the EU?
Yeah, so one of the biggest concerns in the marketplace is the lack of preparedness of the individual country hubs. So if you're manufacturing in a particular country or if you're based in a particular country, you're going to be sending your information to the country hub and then it'll filter through the overall European EU-wide system. But the problem is most of those country hubs are not yet up and functioning. And in truth, in some cases, the actual supplier of the solution has not yet been chosen either. So there's a lot of confusion in the marketplace about who do you connect to, where do I connect to, and how do I connect to moving forward. And there's a concern in some of the countries that their individual hubs may not be ready in time to test sufficiently before they go live.
Yeah, and being a software guy, I understand a lot of the project realities of testing. And if you don't have a hub to test against, that becomes quite problematic. Just one more thing for you, Alistair, at this point in our podcast. One of the things that I've seen in our serialization implementations is that, you have a combination of vendors. So we're dealing with packaging vendors, with their line equipment, and then we're adding in our serialization infrastructure, which includes cameras and software and screens and things like that. And these projects, because you're managing a software and hardware project, tend to last around 12 months or so. So when you look at a February 9th, 2019 date, if our if you're in the marketplace needing to be serialized, you're kind of getting up close to dates to get this project started, right?
Yeah, Steve, I think there's two elements to this in many ways. One of the biggest areas that is a concern is with the EU legislation, which is different to all the rest around globally, is we also have a tamper evidence element to the legislation. So it's not just serialization, unique identifier, it's also tamper evidence. And in Europe, the vast majority of the manufacturing and packaging lines in Europe do not have today tamper evidence equipment actually attached to them. So in the past, when we've had serialization solutions for Korea or for China or indeed for the US, it's been very much a case of retrofitting the lines that were already there. So you would, you know, provide the cameras, you would provide the lighting rigs, the IPCs to go on the lines, but you would not be implementing new capital equipment to the lines because you were just retrofitting what was already there. What we're seeing with the EU legislation is the tamper evidence element of all this is making a bottleneck in the industry. So customers are having to go out and either retrofit onto their lines tamper evidence solutions into the equipment they already have, which is probably about 10-15% of the market. But the vast majority of pharmaceutical companies are having to go out and purchase brand new capital equipment that has typically either gluing or labeling tamper evidence on it. And this is causing a major bottleneck in the industry. I know I was at a major packaging show just last week and speaking to a number of the vendors there, that the hardware vendors, if you like, the people who do item print inspect machinery, one of their biggest issues is that they actually can't make them quick enough. They don't have the space, and some of them have stopped actually taking orders. So yeah, you're correct in your assertion that right now some of these projects, the lead time for the equipment alone is between 6, 8, 12, 15 months. And with the deadline rapidly approaching, a lot of people, if they haven't started their projects, are going to be left behind. The other element to it is obviously service resource. You know, there is a finite resource amongst the various solution vendors, where if they haven't got sufficient of their own staff, or unlike SysTech, where we've gone out to build a dedicated partner network with additional resources, they're just not going to be able to fulfill their customers' requirements in that time. So yes, you're 100% correct to get to the point. If you haven't already chosen your vendor, you should do so in the next 2 or 3 months. And you should definitely be pushing to have a go live in October, November time at the very latest for the lines that you're working with next year.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point to me, because you know I sit more on the SysTech thinking cap of all serialization all the time for the EU FMD, but I think it's important for our listeners to really think about the TE requirement. And like you were talking about, the interesting TE acquisition hardware issues that are out there. Dirk, I would assume that much of our audience is worried about compliance to both the EU FMD and the United States DSCSA. Maybe as we talk about the actual implementation of this, can you talk about some of the similarities and some of the, probably more important, some of the main differences between the two in terms of getting a solution that is compliant together?
Sure. Well, in fact, Alistair's already mentioned, we've been talking about the tamper evidence, which is very unique to the European Union. But the unique identifier does have some similarities and some differences that are pretty important. Obviously, both of them follow GS1 standards, at least for the barcode and the formatting of the barcode. Let me back up from that. It's actually both allow the use. Let's not say that neither one of them actually specify GS1 standards. But they specify ISO standards, which are fulfilled by GS1. Let me put it that way. The product code in the European Union barcode has to be, or can be specified, the actual number that's used for the product code can be specified by each of the member states. And that becomes problematic because there are about three or four different approaches to doing that. Some states allow, some member states allow GS1 G10 for the product code. Some require a national trade item number or N10 for the product code. And some allow a G10, but then they require a national reimbursement code in an additional data element in the barcode. So in the United States, in contrast, it's just the NDC and the serial number and then the other standard data elements as well. So it's a little simpler. It's less of a complex target when you're talking about the product code. Also in the EU, there's another complexity regarding the serial number, which has to be randomized so that you cannot guess that the odds of guessing a valid serial number are less than 1 in 10,000. So in the United States, there is no requirement for randomization, although there's also not a requirement against it. So if you would like to fulfill the EU more restrictive requirements and not have to deal with differences, you could also do the same randomization here in the United States. Fortunately, the definition of the serial number is compatible. They're effectively the same other than the randomization. And then, of course, the other fields that are required in both markets are the lot number and serial number, which are, when you're using GS1 standards, are formatted exactly the same. So those I think, are the complexities, the similarities and differences that I think you're looking for.
Absolutely. And as we sort of roll to the close of this episode of the SysTech podcast, I'm going to put Alistair on the spot a little bit. So for our audience, you know, when you plan a podcast, you have some ideas of topics that you want to go through. And we talk in advance, so we have hopefully what is going to be a good conversation for you to listen to. But Alistair, we didn't discuss what I'm going to ask you here, but I wanted that kind of immediacy of answer. As you've worked with our customers on implementing serialization solutions, what are the one or two project elements that sort of stand out to you as either critical success factors, key areas of pain? What are the, you know, one or two things that pop into your mind immediately when I ask you, if I'm looking at getting this project together, what do I really need to think about?
I think the main issues that we come across in terms of getting a successful project is making sure that the customer's project team has the ability to get information and responses from the actual customer business quick enough so they have the authority to be able to gather all the information that's necessary and make decisions. The other element that I think is really key is to make sure that when things like reviews are taking place, or when you're doing serialization, there's a lot of documentation that has to be reviewed by the customer, and making sure that that's done in one room with everybody sitting around together, rather than it going to IT, then back to the supplier, then back to IT to check, they're happy, it then goes to quality and back to the supplier. It's really all about the speed and accuracy of response from the project side. So they're the two main things, making sure the project team have the right authority and the right access to the business to get the data that's necessary. And two is the responsiveness and the speed of reply on requests from the vendor. I guess if I was going to throw a third one in, to be cheeky, I would say the other thing to look at is make sure that every department's involved. Often we start a project and we'll see it's IT and packaging that are involved, where really we need IT, packaging, Q&A, the production, maintenance and engineering all need to be involved from the start, and making sure that everybody in both the customer and the supplier team has a relationship and is included and involved in the decision-making process. I think they're the three main things.
Yeah, I think that's great insight. And again, it all boils down to, you know, that internal communication and getting that all over project buy-in. I definitely, that definitely resonates with me, and I know it will with our audience. So Dirk and Alistair, I really appreciate your time today on the SysTech podcast. I think this was a very enlightening conversation. And for those folks that don't know, if you go to our SysTech1.com website, we have a whole resource page on the EUFMD. So hopefully you'll be able to check that out as well. So gentlemen, I appreciate your time today, and thank you very much.